You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Morning, good morning, good morning, good morning.
He ain't touring no more, but you can hear him here every morning at 6. Sometimes even before 6.
What happened with Punxsutawney Phil today? Do we know? Punxsutawney.
I do not know that.
Let's see. Did that happen yet? Sometimes it's already happened. Let's see what happens.
Happy Ground Frauds Day.
That's true for my boy Mark Fincham. I gotta check my emails for Mark and see if he makes his Groundhog Day. Let's see. All right. We'll see. I don't know. I didn't get this. Is horrible news from Pennsylvania. Thank you. We'll figure it out. Anyway, happy Groundhog's Day to everybody. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, the 33rd annual Groundhog Day show. One of the biggies. A lot of people. This is the one that Danny Ekstrom comes out of his hole and listens to the show and says, man, love this DeSimone guy.
They haven't turned it into a gift-giving holiday or a greeting card holiday, so I like it already.
Wild and wacky. Larson will be at the bottom of the hour. U of A hoops. We'll talk about Jed Fish recruiting classes, maybe some U of A ticket prices. Review an AFC and NFC championship game. Ignore that NBA basketball exists. What else do we got here today? We have female athletes sounding the alarm about trans athletes in women's sports. We have Democrats regretting purging GOP from committees when they were in the in control of the House.
Sure.
We have this great piece from the Washington Post about newsrooms that move beyond objectivity can build trust. So let's. That's now I kind of like it, and I'm going to tell you why.
Yeah, I know where you're going to go, so we'll get there. I know what you're going to do. It's the known quantity thing. I think
you are correct, sir. You are correct.
Thank you, Ed.
I'll do my Dana Carvey talking about. Sorry, officer. I had two slippery monkeys at the hook and crook. That's Johnny getting pulled over on the PCH. 2018 audit found vulnerabilities in TUSD computer system. We'll talk about that. We'll tell you, according to this piece on KGUN 9 by Faith Abercrombie, how many times more deadly is it to drive in Pima County than any other county in America? Wait till I get
to
that number.
It's a multiple now? Yikes.
It is a multiple. If we did it in expressed it in how much percent more dangerous, it's gonna blow your mind. Let's see, more Scottsdale Unified School District stuff. Mayorkas, Andy finally did file his articles of impeachment. The Senate and House in the state of Arizona passed the budget in record time. We'll talk about that. The Republicans want bill to allow pregnant drivers to use the HOV lane and some other pregnant people also.
Sponsored by the GOP.
Thank you. And so we got Larson Schweikert, and then Mark will be here from Games and Gadgets. He was supposed to be here last week, but he was a little under the weather. So he'll be back for trivia at 7:37. We're going to see if we can pull that one off one more time. This one I thought of Matt because this is one of his places. AAA named their most favorite romantic restaurants in the West. And coming up in that top list was El Corral.
I saw that.
Now, again, you told me you had a great job at El Corral, great time, and I guess the question is, would you put it in the does it feel romantic to be inside of El Corral?
I was there with my baby, so yeah, it was okay. By definition, it was absolutely.
Awesome. All right. Again, I'm just saying. I thought about you when this happened. The other one they have in Arizona was the, of course, the Different Point of View, which is the one at Tapatio Cliffs. which is fine. I mean, it looks at a golf course and some, you know, cruddy looking hills in the back.
Never been there, but of course, since it's the name of the point, that was the original name. I don't know if it's still called the point anymore. I'm sure none of them are called the point anymore. But again, old guard place, right?
This one looks like it's they still call it the different point of view at the.
Oh yeah, right. Oh. It's still part of the name of the restaurant, but yeah. Right. One of the older guard has a little bit of a.
Oh, that's right, because the hotel on the baseline was the point at South Mountain.
Sure.
That's right. We used to have Wrestler's Roost.
Yes. Remember it well.
I don't know. It's still there, I think. It's still there?
Well, it was a few years ago. Oh, yeah.
Not sure if the coronavirus destroyed Wrestler's Roost.
The slide.
Wrestler's Roost. So you had the slide, the metal slide going mm-hmm. in. I remember mm-hmm. that. Then we had looks like, yeah, Awatuki's oldest eatery marks 50 years. That was in 2021. Okay, I think it's there. So when we were visiting from New York, when we still lived there, we went to Wrestler's Roost. So for us, it was like, okay, the slide. Okay. Then they had Rattlesnake on the appetizers.
Right. I'd forgotten about that. Sure.
And that was something we're like, whoa, what was that? I remember one time they have this thing on the menu where literally it's called like the Cowboy Supper or something. It's kind of like a family style thing, right? So they bring out the big tray and it's got ribs and, you know, corn on the cob and everything all on one big thing, right? And I said, oh, let's try that. That sounds like something different, right? And then all of a sudden we start, there's these maniacs that work there running around, you know, the triangle, and they're clanging it,
oh, no.
Right? And I'm going, what the hell's that, right? Oh, it's because we ordered this thing. So anyone who gets this, like, they run it out to your table, like, yeah, they're getting the old cowboy dinner. You know, like, oh, my God. I mean, what morons? Oh, it's us.
the meat version of Ferrell's.
I always remembered also, yeah, and I think they stopped. Remember all, some of these chain restaurants would have everyone sing your birthday song? Do we think that was that a good thing? Did we like the everyone singing your birthday? Me not a fan. Yeah, just telling just you. Not a fan. All right, we got happy hour. Oh, first of all, opening day of Rito Racetrack is happening on Saturday, post time 1:00.
Oh, it's happening.
It's way happening. Tomorrow at 7:30, Ed Ackerley will be here. He's the head of the Rito Foundation. But at the same time, we're going to introduce Mike and Haley, who are two U of A students with the racing program. And our goal is to have students from the program every other Friday to preview what's going on at Rito. So this guy, Mike, is like from Jersey or something. And he's like a handicapping guy. So what's funny is when you go to Rito and you're in the paddock watching the horses do their thing, you'll see these two students in the middle with their microphones going, you know, I really like number 8, Neelyism Amok coming out of the 8 hole, right? That's Mike and Haley. So they'll be here tomorrow and we're going to talk some horses. And then Monday, of course, is our amazing happy hour at Games and Gadgets. It's going to be in the Short Rest Tavern in the back, a cozy little medieval-esque tavern with local wines, craft beer, and meads, and catered by the great Malta Joe. Malta Joe was there yesterday confabbing with Mark on how this is all going to go down.
Sweet.
A Wake Up Tucson event. Check this out, with preparation and forethought.
You think Adriana was back here?
Right. That's not, that crap. That kind of stuff doesn't come from DeSimone. That's from pros like Mark and Joe. Good stuff. If you can let me know you're coming at wakeuptucsoncomments@gmail.com, that would be great. A lot of you have done it. I always appreciate that. All right. Let's go to. We got to start off. This is one of our one of the traditions and part of the 33rd annual Groundhog Day. And of course, let's visit that fateful day where Phil Connors was waking up in his B&B in the beautiful town of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show. Opening tune for Groundhog Day, the old weatherman opening credits.
I like it.
As Phil's driving from the big city to Punxsutawney in the van. U.S. Oxymoron Association has added a new oxymoron out there.
Oh, goody!
We've heard of jumbo shrimp.
Of course.
Right. We've heard of military intelligence, as a lot of my military friends would say. We've heard, let's see, what are some other good oxymorons here that we have? We got grow smaller, right? That's a good one. I like that one. Alone together.
Yikes. Yep.
Accurate estimate. That's a good one. Bittersweet. Climb down.
Okay.
Let's see. Original copy.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's a good one.
Same difference. Seriously funny. Small crowd. Virtual reality.
Yeah.
And they just added a new one. It's this one's a good one. I like this one. Health expert. It's been made an oxymoron dedicated to Dr. Christ, Dr. Hines, Dr. Cullen, Dr. England, the guy with that cool ponytail at the beginning of the coronavirus. He's the guy who bailed out because he knew this is a lose-lose and let Cullen take over and ruin everybody's lives. So even Dr. England with that cool ponytail at age 78, he's like, I'm out. I'm just going to go catalog my Grateful Dead albums and in retirement and have a nice life.
COVID vaccine. I guess that could be another.
Oh,
oxymoron.
That's a great question. That's really, cause it's not a vaccine, which we've learned. So Eddie A sends out this, hey, didn't we already have a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing, right? And what's happening is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame would like people to talk about them more, so the nominations now come out earlier so they can blither blather about it until the fall, right? And but so my thing on this is I just a simple letter that I wrote to them yesterday on a Care Bear note card that I had left over. Dear Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, just change your name to the Music Hall of Fame. Stop saying rock. Stop saying that you're all a bunch of bad rockers we're putting in here. Because what's happening is there's not enough Hall of Fame level rockers to put into the thing anymore. So when I look at the people that are nominated, all right, so here's some ones I could say, I can have a discussion about being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Okay? Warren Zevon, I can have a discussion. Okay? It's okay. I think Iron Maiden's a yes. Right? I mean, heavy metal is a part of rock, and they're definitely one of the kings of heavy metal. I can have that. I'm there. All right? Soundgarden, as one of the original grungers, I can have that discussion. Spinners as a influential act, I can have that discussion. But here we go. So, I love me my Dolly Parton.
Of course.
But Dolly Parton should never be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Let's just cut the crap.
Even she thought she shouldn't be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
She's like, I'm 70, whatever. I'm just going to go do it. But Missy Elliott, she's what, more pop hip hop, right? I love me my Willie Nelson, right? But Willie's a country act. And Willie's a great songwriter, but I don't think Willie wrote too many rock songs. Right? Kate Bush, new wave. Thank God Stranger Things resurrected her career a little bit here. Yeah. I mean, Cyndi Lauper, for what? I mean, Cyndi Lauper had what, 3 or 4 good hits in the 80s?
And the rock stations at the time were playing them. They had more of a wide open format, even though the music is.
The rock stations were not playing Cyndi Lauper in the 80s.
Sure. When it first came out?
She would never be on KLPX. She'd be on. KRQ. She was a KRQ in the 80s.
Okay.
In New York, she'd be on Z100.
All right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm gonna agree to disagree.
My memory may be fuzzy.
This is an oxymoron. Respectfully disagree. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So, but anyway,
with all due respect, that means here comes the haymaker.
George Michael. No. George Michael's a pop act. So anyway, I'm not going to, my thing, just change the name to the Hall of Music, Hall of Fame, the Music Hall of Fame. Just do that. Stop the lie. We're okay with it. Let's get the Windows XP in before the sports director calls in. Christopher, what's up?
Chris, good morning. I want to nominate Burl Ives for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Silver and gold, baby.
Silver and gold.
Hold on. Let me talk to the. He's in. He's in. I just looked over at the judges. All seven. Thumbs up.
Cool goatee and everything.
Thank you.
Silver and gold. Silver and gold.
Much thanks. Okay, Chris. Hey, Chris, I want to recommend an article for everybody to read.
Yes.
It's on technocracy.news, and it's all about the new 360 surveillance squad cars that are coming out. And, buddy boy, the magic this stuff can do, I mean, it's eye-opening. So my point is, I don't know. I think it's between, I don't know who's going to get us first, Skynet or Ed 209 from RoboCop. I don't know. I think Ed 209 might be taking the lead.
You know, and
you got to check it out. I mean, it has three settings, Chris. It's got low, medium, and high, and it won't even explain the settings. It's got Bliss. It's got all these acronyms for what it can do. Facial recognition. And it's 360. Have you pulled it up?
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, it's very, you might want to get someone on to talk about this. And then you go down in the article and all of these municipalities are getting it. Sandy, you name it. They're all like chomping at the bit to get these cars. So Ed 209, buddy.
It's, well, I mean, we just had the James Bond SUV for Pliskin Acres last week. So why would not have self-driving police cars? We'll stop for police.
I don't know if they're autonomous, Chris, but I'm sure they have the capacity. And then, the picture at the top, it looks like a Pima County Sheriff car. I guess they make all the cop cars green now to stay on board with the agenda.
The other thing that scares me, I'm trying to remember if it's General Dynamics or Boston Dynamics. One of those has it's that robot that they show and it hops from stair to stair and platform from platform kind of thing. And
yeah.
I mean, there's your Ed 209, dude. It's coming. So
now they say that one could be fake, Chris, because the scaffolding doesn't move and the thing weighs 800 pounds. Is that called Atlas, I think, or it's got some weird name?
Ah, so you're thinking it's people are saying it's a advanced animation.
Yeah, advanced fakery.
Excellent. All right. Well,
anyway,
it's coming.
The good work. I heard they bulldozed the homeless encampment. It's the word on the street, but I haven't been able to verify it.
Well, it's Gem Show week, buddy. You got to bulldoze it now. It'll be back later. Don't worry. Gem Show's over in 10 days.
Oh, killer ABC movie of the week sometime, Chris. Killdozer. It's a great movie.
ABC movie of the week was Killdozer? I used to watch the Planet of the Apes movies on those days.
Yeah.
So.
All right, Chris.
Later, sir.
You guys have a great day. God bless.
Sports director coming up. We're going to talk U of A hoops, and we'll review what happened in the NFL this past
weekend.
And
Phil saw his shadow.
Ah! Too many lines from Groundhog's Day that I... Now, my boy Joe Higgins hates Groundhog's Day. I don't know why.
So, I need to watch it again. When it came out, I was not a fan of it at all. I get the movie. I get it. And I like it more now. But it's been a while since I watched it. But when it first came out, I loathed the movie.
I'm with you.
I don't
you.
Know why.
All right. We'll break this down in a psychological breakdown.
Please.
In the third hour.
take a number, my friend.
Let's get to the regional vice president of sports directing and information.
Yes.
Ryan Larson. Ryan, good morning, buddy.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Not too bad. I was very impressed that you came off the bench and played quarterback for the Niners on Sunday. Well played. Good job. You hung in there.
Yeah, I did my best. I mean, just all they asked me to do was keep handing the ball off, just like everybody else. So. Happy to be their fifth quarterback of the season.
I really wanted to, I mean, it just sucks. I really wanted to see what Brock Purdy was going to do in that situation. He had this amazing ride, and then he's out in the first quarter, and then it's over.
Yeah, the 49ers have had a great season. I mean, they lose Trey Lance in their second game of the season, who is supposed to be their starter. Jimmy Garoppolo comes in. He goes down at the midway point of the season, and then they have to turn to Brock Purdy, who was the last pick in the draft. He's a rookie, and they go 8-0 with him as their starter. And it just felt like Kyle Shanahan, the 49ers coach, kept being able to pull rabbits out of hats because of how he kept making these quarterbacks look good, no matter who it was that he had to try out. But apparently, three quarterbacks is where the magic runs out, because once Brock Purdy went down with a shoulder injury, 7 minutes into the first quarter of the game against the Eagles, the game was over. It was over for them. The 49ers had to trot out Josh Johnson, who has been in the league for a while. He's played on 13 different NFL teams.
I couldn't believe that. I haven't even heard of him. And then when they were saying he was on 13 different teams, like, he must have been third string his entire life, this poor guy.
Yeah, exactly. Josh Johnson was not good enough to be the backup for the Broncos this year. That's his level of play. The Broncos are terrible at quarterback. And so the 49ers pull him off the practice squad, put him in as their second stringer. And then just to add a little insult to injury from the football gods, Josh Johnson gets a concussion in the third quarter, goes out, so he's out too. So they just have to put Purdy back in, who cannot throw, and just have him hand off the ball for the rest of the game. It was just, this game, there's not a lot to take away from it. The 49ers had no chance the second Purdy got hurt, just because you can't win games in the NFL if you don't have a quarterback.
Yep.
And Josh Johnson was not great to begin with, but when you have a quarterback who literally cannot throw the ball, I mean, you're not winning that game against the Eagles. You're not winning that game against anybody. So just a tough break for the 49ers, who just, bad break after bad break all season. They weathered the storm up until this point, but this was too much even for them.
So now we have the Chiefs-Bengals game, which had, I think, one bad call for me, and it wasn't the roughing the passer. That I thought that was an obvious roughing the passer, but you know, the one out of bounds at the end that set him up for the field goal.
The late hit, yeah.
Yeah, but since he had two chances to come back down the field and win this thing, and they didn't make it happen either.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that one. There's going to be a lot of Bengals fans who will gripe about the officiating of this game because a lot of calls went against them. And that's certainly the case that some of the calls were suspect, but Cincinnati could have won this game against the Chiefs. They had multiple opportunities in the fourth quarter when the game was tied and they had the ball where they could have driven down the field, scored to take the lead, and essentially put the game away, and they just couldn't do that. And really what it comes down to is Patrick Mahomes was just, he was incredible in this game. Now, if you look at his numbers, they're pretty standard, pretty pedestrian by Mahomes standards anyway. He had 325 yards, two touchdowns, you know, ho-hum Patrick Mahomes game. But just when you look at the context of the Chiefs' offense in this game, it's just so incredibly impressive what Mahomes did, because the Chiefs, they could only run the ball for 42 yards in this game. Mahomes had 8 of those yards. So basically Chiefs running backs counted for 30 yards. The Chiefs' top three receivers, not named Travis Kelce, so like their actual wide receivers, all got injured in this game.
That's true.
And so they were down to their fourth and fifth string receivers. And then after that, Mahomes is still dealing with a high ankle sprain, which most of the time is a 3-week recovery minimum. And he's playing on it a week after the injury occurred. And so this was, the Chiefs' entire offense was on Mahomes' shoulders. He's doing it injured, and he still does enough where he makes enough incredible plays that the Chiefs were able to score 23 points and win this game. It was all on Mahomes, and that's why this game was just going to be another defining moment in Mahomes' career, just because everything was on his shoulders, and he did it while injured, and he did it so well. Just did not make – he had one weird fumble where he basically dropped the ball while he was trying to throw it, but other than that, he didn't make any real mistakes in this game. And so Mahomes got it done while Burrow and the Bengals, Burrow was good in this game. He had a lot of good throws, but he had two interceptions, one of which was a pretty great play by the defense, but one was totally his fault. And then he got sacked a million times because the Bengals offensive line just could not hold up for another week. And
he did get
Mahomes
sacked.
Mahomes outplayed Burrow in this game. Yeah, he got sacked four times in the first quarter. That's not good.
Mahomes
just won the battle.
The one call for me that was just bizarre was the one, it was the third down. They don't make the Chiefs have the ball. They don't make the first down, right? They're already trotting out their punt team to punt. And then the ref's like, oh yeah, I blew the whistle. No, none of you heard it. we're going to redo that. And you're like, say what? No one heard that except for you.
So the issue that the NFL faces with officiating in the playoffs is that they try to create these all-star officiating groups where they just supposedly reward their best ref officials by putting them all together to ref these playoff games. And what happens is these crews don't know each other, so they don't have a rhythm down, they don't know how each operates, and it can lead to mistakes like this, which what happened was it was 3rd and 9 for the Chiefs. They don't convert it, and so the Bengals think that they are forcing the Chiefs to punt, but apparently an official had been trying to blow the whistle before the play even started, and no one heard it because Arrowhead is like the loudest stadium in the NFL. And the Bengals are livid because the officials decide to just give the Chiefs another chance on third down, give them 3rd and 9 again, even though they ran an entire play. And the Chiefs this time around don't convert it again, but the officials call holding on the Bengals, giving the Chiefs a free first down. And so basically the Chiefs got 2 chances at 3rd down. They did not convert either, but officiating gave them a 1st down anyway. And so that's just, it looked bad from the NFL perspective. I get why they did it, just because no one could hear the play. You don't want to give the Chiefs, you don't want to run the play, even if you're trying to stop it. And so it looked bad for the Bengals. I'm sure the Bengals are extremely upset still about that. But ultimately, the Bengals had their chances, and they did not convert in this game. And that's the end result for them.
We'll preview Super Bowl next week. Let's talk about Tom Brady. Yes, he retired. We don't have to do a retrospective on his career. We did it the first time he retired. So he already signed a deal with Fox Sports to do announcing. Is that what happened?
Yeah, he signed a deal sometime last year before he retired the first time, where he's going to go and be an announcer for them. The funny thing is, so when Fox signed Brady to this deal, the idea was that he was going to become probably their lead game commentator now that they don't have Troy Aikman and Joe Buck. But Fox has stumbled backwards into the best football announcer in the game right now, and Greg Olsen.
He's very good.
He's a former Panthers tight end. And he's now their lead commentator because he's excellent, just makes great calls on the game. It doesn't just tell you what you can see from watching it, but brings real insight into the football game. And everyone loves Greg Olsen, but now Fox kind of has this conundrum where they signed Brady to a lot of money to join their broadcast team, but they actually have someone who's probably going to be better than Brady is, if we're being honest. Like, just because you're a great quarterback does not mean you're going to be a great commentator. Like, Romo's pretty good, but they tried Drew Brees, and Drew Brees was terrible. And so they should just stick with Olsen, but now Fox has this funny little conundrum where they're going to be paying Brady a lot of money either way after signing him to your contract, but people are going to be upset if they get rid of Greg Olsen.
But anyway, we'll see how that plays out. And then another big thing, NFL, then we'll go to break, then we'll do U of A hoops, is Sean Payton's coming back to coaching for all you long-suffering Broncos fans with your Brock Osweiler T-shirts. So he's coming back for the Broncos, huh?
Yeah, Chris. So as a long-suffering Broncos fan, I will tell you, I don't have a Brock Osweiler T-shirt, but I'll give you a couple minutes here on my thoughts. So I'll start with the positive.
Hold on. Do you have a what's my Florida quarterback that played for you guys? The guy who can't the Christian kid.
The guy who couldn't throw, who's left-handed.
But he actually won you guys a playoff game against the Steelers.
Oh, that Tebow guy.
Tebow, that's right.
Yeah. Demaryius Thomas won that playoff game. I stand by it. Anyway. So the positive for the Broncos here is that Peyton is a great coach. He's won a Super Bowl. He's known as an offensive mastermind. He's considered a quarterback whisperer because he did great things with Drew Brees. And Russell Wilson is in desperate need of help. He needs a quarterback whisperer because he was terrible this year. And basically, any coach you hire is going to be a massive upgrade over Nathaniel Hackett, who was the worst in-game coach I've ever witnessed in my entire life. So those are the positives for the Broncos. Peyton's a good coach, but I hate the Broncos process in hiring Sean Payton because I don't think that hiring Sean Payton for the Broncos is going to change anything. And they just gave up a massive haul of draft picks to get him. They gave up a first-round pick this year and a second-round pick next year for a coach. And yes, Payton is a massive improvement, but they're still playing in a division with Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert. And so the only way that this move really works for the Broncos is if Peyton can somehow fix Russell Wilson. And maybe just this last season broke me of watching Russell Wilson play quarterback, but I don't think he's fixable by any coach, really, because Wilson, it's well known that he refuses to run his coach's offense. He's going to run the Russell Wilson offense when he plays quarterback, no matter what his coach is trying to do. And I don't know if that's going to change with Sean Payton.
I think Sean Payton's pretty much he's a hard ass on things, I think. Another thing is, you guys are crappy enough to get a good draft pick to get a quarterback, so that's where you're at.
Yeah, well, they would have been crappy enough to get a quarterback, but they traded that pick to the Seahawks.
Oh, that's true.
Now, the fifth overall pick. They had the 49ers pick, which was 29. But that's the thing, is you're giving up these picks. The Broncos roster is good, but it's not great. They still have plenty of holes. And you know what's great about most coaches is you don't have to give up draft picks to hire them. They went after the one guy that you have to trade for and give up a first-round pick for, and they give up a lot for him. And so this could work out for the Broncos theoretically because Peyton is such a good coach. And maybe they go back to where they can be in contention to be like the seventh seed in the playoffs. But you just look at this division, you're playing against the Chiefs, they're in the Super Bowl right now, and then the Chargers, who are also going to be good with Justin Herbert for a long time. It's just you gave up two premium draft picks to go from fourth to third in the division. And I just don't love it all around. I'm sure Sean Payton loves it. He's getting paid $20 million a year. But I just don't like the entire Broncos process. It felt like they were trying to make a splash when they didn't get D'Amico Ryans, who went to the Texans.
You guys need a reboot, and I think you guys need a reboot. And Peyton has shown that he's a good enough coach to do a reboot. So we'll see. Now I want to bring our universes together. Sports director, and then Mark, our movie guy. Right. So we've done it in the past. Mm-hmm. Right. Worst casting in a movie ever, right? In relation to why is that person playing that person? In Netflix, uh-huh, did a movie where it's about Sean Payton coaching his kids' football team, right? Larson, who played Sean Payton in that movie?
Kevin James.
The King of Queens guy playing Sean Payton.
I have not watched this movie because it's Kevin James playing Sean Payton. The casting makes no sense to me.
I'm sure.
And the funniest part is this movie is like Kevin James went and coached his kids' football team, like middle school football team or whatever. But the reason he's coaching is because he got suspended for Bounty Gate when the Saints were paying their players to injure people.
That's
it's not
true.
A feel-good story.
Daddy, why are you here? Well, they busted me for paying people to break people's legs on a football team. Oh.
Yeah. It's just, they're trying to make this uplifting story with Kevin James, and it just does not seem like it should work.
Hold that thought, Dr. Larson. When we come back, we'll get to the University of Arizona's last weekend and what's coming up tonight. They got a home game. I think it's at midnight tonight.
Something like that.
A friend of mine said, hey, would you...
I think it's 2 a.m.
A friend of mine said, would you like to come? She's got great seats. Do you want to come to the game on Thursday? And I go, what time's the game? I mean, she's like second row, like center, right? And I go, and she goes, It's 8:30. I go, I can't make that. Come on.
You wouldn't even have to go to bed for the show tomorrow. Right? You can just stay up.
I'll just sleep in the car.
Next, yeah. Sleep in the green room here, you know.
Or the crazy homeless guy who sleeps in the woods here. We'll do that too. So, all right, hold on. One more segment with Larson, U.S. Congressman David Schweikert coming up after that. And then Mark's here with trivia. Wake up. 6:51 in the morning. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 of the Voice, local news and talk, 33rd annual Groundhog's Day show. Very special for a lot of people and groundhogs. Let's get to our good friend Ryan Larson. He's our sports director, regional vice president of sports information and catering. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks, Chris.
The University of Arizona is a little bit... they're a little bit of a roller coaster ride. These kids, they're number 5 in the country, but it's been a little bit of a roller coaster ride. Tell us about the Washington schools last weekend.
Yeah, it's an interesting week for Arizona, but ultimately, you know, you go 2-0 on the road, and that's a success in the Pac-12. And so, the first game against Washington State, Arizona looks pretty poor. They win this game 63-58. And while they led the entire game, they were never able to pull away. Their largest lead was 10 points in the second half, but it was generally a lot closer throughout the game. And so Washington, Arizona wins this game because Washington State's offense was not good in this game. They barely managed to shoot 32% from the field. The only reason Washington State was able to keep it close and score any points was because they shot 19 free throws. Arizona only shot 6 in this game. And so this was just a weird game all around in the sense that Ballo finished with 1 point despite playing 24 minutes in this game, which normally if Ballo is only scoring 1 point, that's a sign of disaster for Arizona. They generally are not capable of withstanding a bad game from either Ballo or Tubelis, but especially a game where Ballo was this bad. But instead, they saw signs of life from Kirk Reese's shooting stroke. He went 5 of 10 from three, and that was absolutely huge for the Wildcats. They desperately needed that contribution from him. And then Tubelis, as usual, as he's been for the last couple of weeks, he had a strong game. He had 18 points. And so overall, Arizona was probably fortunate that Washington State struggled as much as they did on offense. But for whatever reason, the Cougars have just given the Wildcats fits this season. I think if Arizona in the Pac-12 tournament wants to avoid any team in the early rounds, it's probably Washington State at this point, just because they demolished them at home and then gave them another tough game. And so it's good Arizona got out of there with a win. I mean, Washington State is probably the best, like, I think they're 10-12 team. They're 10-12. They're the best 10-12 team in the country just because they keep playing teams tough in the Pac-12, but they never managed to win the game somehow. So that's a good win for Arizona. I'll give them that. And then they followed it up by crushing Washington. And that's really what you want to see from the Wildcats at this point. It's really their first comfortable blowout win on the road in conference play. And so that was good for the Wildcats. They go out and win by 23. Of course, you can note that they only led by 2 at halftime before demolishing the Huskies and outscoring them by 21 in the second half. But we see this game against Washington, we saw what Arizona can be when they're at their best on offense, because the team shot 42% from three. They had great shooting games from Creason and Ramey, which just opened things up completely for Tubelis and Ballo. You look at Ballo, who had that terrible game against Washington State. He went 9-9 from the field in this game. He didn't miss a shot. It was so easy for him. He had 21 points, and Tubelis as well had 25 on his own. And so we just see what Arizona's offense, when it functions like this, this is how the Wildcats can beat anybody. When we get to March, this is how the Wildcats are going to have to be a threat, is if they get actual three-point shooting from their guards, if they open up the floor so that Ballo and Tubelis can operate in some space rather than just having the paint completely clogged, Arizona's offense can function well, and they can be threats to beat anybody or to put up 95 on anybody. And that's what you want to see from them going forward, is you want to see Creason and Ramey shooting better. You want to see them making life better for Ballo and Tubelis, rather than it just having to be a bailout moment where they toss the ball to Ballo or Tubelis in the paint and say, please find a way to score for us, even though two guys are guarding you right now. So this was good to see from Arizona as they transition into the Oregon schools this week.
So now we have the Oregon schools at home. And, of course, the U of A seems to have, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that frustrating ability to play down to their opponents. Is this one of those possible trap weekends that they got to be really careful and go out there and smash these two?
So for Oregon State, I would say no, that's not a trap game on Saturday, because Oregon State is terrible and they're one of the worst teams in the Pac-12. Even if Arizona plays poorly, they should still win by double digits. Now for Oregon, if we remember less than 3 weeks ago, Oregon demolished the Wildcats in Eugene.
Yep.
And in that game, Arizona showed little effort on defense. They got crushed in rebounding, and their own offense struggled against Oregon's physical defense. And so the question for Oregon is, they've been the most inconsistent team in the Pac-12. You just look at their last three games that they've played since beating the Wildcats. They lose to Stanford, they're worse than Oregon State. They might be the worst team in the Pac-12 besides Cal. Then they barely beat a Colorado team that's been pretty mediocre. And then they demolished Utah in Salt Lake. And Utah, before this week, was second in the Pac-12. And so this Oregon team, when they play right, when they show effort and they're consistent, they can beat anybody, as we saw when they crushed Arizona. But they also have the capacity to just play the worst game you'll ever see from a team this talented. And so I don't know what we're going to get from Oregon, but we know that the Wildcats against Oregon the first week, they had no answer for Oregon's physicality. In Folly Dante, Oregon center just crushed them the entire game. And then the guards couldn't keep up with some of the speed that Oregon's guards like Jumaine Cousinard had. And so Arizona needs to come out, and this is the trap game. They can't assume because they're at home they're going to win this game. this time around. They need to come out and they need to put in the effort, because Oregon can beat them. We've already seen that. And if Oregon plays well, they can hang with the Wildcats, even if the Wildcats play well too. So this is going to be a tough game. Arizona needs to be ready for it.
So being number five, who are the four teams above us in the rankings right now?
So the unanimous number one overall right now, that's Purdue. Purdue is number one overall. Number two is, the number two team right now that we have in front of Arizona. I just lost my notes on this one. And so ahead of them, we have, okay, Alabama, who just got smoked by Oklahoma. They're down to number four. They were number two before this week. Number two is Tennessee, who got crushed by Florida last night. And then Houston is number three, and they just recently lost to Temple. So ahead of Arizona, outside of Purdue, all the other teams ahead of them aren't playing great either. And so there's been a lot of consistency at the top. Purdue deserves to be unanimous number one. But for Arizona, being a one seed and a trip to the Final Four are very much in play still. Because you look at the other teams that have been really good, they're still struggling as well. They're losing to bad teams right now. And so Arizona could make a run to the point where they finish the season ranked number two, provided they win out, of course. But
and that was my question, right? So they have a solid shot of being a top seed of a bracket coming up in March, if they don't.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And talent wise, they match up with anybody still. When they're right, Arizona matches up with any of the other teams in the top five.
Awesome, great job as always, sporting director. We'll see you next week for Super Bowl preview.
Thanks, Chris. Great talking to you. Looking forward to talking Super Bowl next week.
You got it, my friend. Have a good day.
You too.
U.S. Congressman David Schweikert coming up next. We'll talk about his last two grumpy floor speeches that were just amazing. Wake up.